Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Night Talk Live with Colin Knight. As we continue the educational journey through an uncharted paranormal universe, a glimpse of the paranormal unknown, we invite your comments and questions of tonight's guest and information. Phone lines shall be live, and your observations and questions are always welcome. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. This is Night Talk Live. Tonight's guest is Jason Lincoln Jeffers, author The Next Human, A Guide to Personal and Collective Evolution. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants. What a great night to be on the air. Saturday, September the 29th, 2012. It's 16 degrees Celsius in the city of Calgary, Canada tonight. That's about 61 degrees Fahrenheit for our American friends. The crisp feel of the fall air. They forecast snow next week in Calgary. Next Tuesday, as a matter of fact. I'm sure it will be just the teaser for what is to come into the dead of winter up here. Shout-outs tonight to our local listeners. We usually go abroad, but tonight we're on local listener night. Dave from Bowness, Calgary, Alberta. Welcome aboard, Dave. Susan from Okotoks, thanks for the email, hello. And, of course, the Southeast Brickies' much better half, Beth. Coffee soon, Beth. And our Scottish lass, who never has enough time to for proper downtime. We hope you get to hear all of the show tonight, kiddo. Special hello to our listeners in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. Glad you found us on the internet dial. And Marcy and John in Medicine Hat, Alberta. Send me your info on the paranormal group. We'd love to know more. Do you believe in ghosts? Have you ever had a paranormal experience? If so, we would like to hear from you. Tell me about your experience. Email Colin at nighttalkradio, one word, nighttalkradio.com. And we have a special shout-out, special thanks, to Mr. Paul Dale Roberts over at the HPI Network in California for his amazing stories and investigations. Paul posts his information often on nighttalkradio.com, and if you get a chance, we do invite you to check it out. Tonight, we are live in color. For those of you lucky enough to be on the studio video feed, we remind those listening, if you wish to come to the virtual studio, log on to blogtalkradio.com, type TerraChat in the station locator, and choose tonight's edition, and you will see a chat room access button. Come visit us and interact real time. Broadcasting around the world via blogtalkradio.com and through repeater services on the TerraChat radio network, we welcome all nations to the show tonight. With us tonight, a very interesting gentleman, a spiritual teacher, life and wellness coach, an authority on transpersonal psychology and alternative medicine, author of The Next Human, A Guide to Personal and Collective Evolution, Mr. Jason Lincoln Jeffers. And we'll bring Jason up now. Good evening, Jason. Welcome to Night Talk.
Good evening, Colin. Thank you so much for having me.
Jason, I've already read a couple of chapters of your book, The Next Human, and I got to admit, I can't wait to finish it. After scanning through this book, I don't think we'll be able to fully explain all that's in there because it is quite in depth, but let's see how far we can get tonight. How's that?
Okay, sounds good.
All right. In the introduction, you outlined some major events which shaped your future. Before we get into the full book content, for our listeners, can you give a brief overview of those events to let our listeners know how you came to write this book?
Yes, of course. Well, for me, it began about 25 years ago when I came down with a very severe chronic fatigue syndrome, as it's known medically. My father passed away in 1988, someone I was very close to, and I was going through a divorce at the same time. So the stress and everything that the events that were taking place in my life at that time took a toll on my health.
Right.
I came down with a very, very severe fatigue, which lasted almost 20 years, with 11 of it very debilitating. So what it did essentially is it forced me inward and began a transformational journey of the self. And so I started to observe other people's behavior around me, my friends, my family. I observed my own behavior. I studied, I researched, I tried to find out why I was riddled with this fatigue syndrome. Plus, I had a number of other diseases on top of it during many years, chronic dizziness and borderline type 2 diabetes. And all of these other diseases, they just kept getting worse and worse. And
right.
I became suicidal, I became depressed, and I had, you know, all of this anxiety. I didn't really have enough energy to do much of anything. So I did a lot of studying and research and introspection. Eventually, it came to the point, culminated, where I founded a company back in 1999 that had a product that was helping me detoxify heavy metals. I had mercury toxicity from all these fillings that I was put in my mouth when I was 15. And so I finally found this product that was helping me detoxify and started to feel a little bit better eventually. And then I created this business, and the business took off and became a multi-million-dollar successful business. But I was still not happy. I was still miserable, even though I had made a lot of money and everything, just because
right.
I was carrying this heavy pain body within me, and I didn't realize that I was attracting the people around me with similar pain bodies, because like attracts like.
Right.
And so eventually it culminated to the point where I was in New York. I eventually left the company and sold my shares and went to New York for a year. I actually became estranged from my family for 2.5 years because I simply couldn't be around them because it was just causing me too much pain. I was in pain all the time. And so I kind of escaped to New York, so to speak, and my first nephew was born on September 11, 2007.
Wow.
And, yeah, and so when he was born, I hadn't spoken to my sister in over probably 2.5 years. When he was born, something came over me, and I just started crying. I started travailing, and I started saying out loud to myself, I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want to be angry anymore. And I just was crying, and I wanted to come home and be a loving uncle to my newborn nephew, Hudson. And so that really was the beginning of this awakening process that allowed a little bit of light to shine into my life. And ever since then, my heart has really led the mind, whereas before I was allowing my mind to lead my heart. And
right.
I was really, really lost in my mind. And so that's the process that instead of going out and getting another high-paying job that would bring me a lot of income, I started painting full-time. And then all of a sudden, I decided to put words to paper a couple of years ago, and these words just started to flow through me. And that's how the book came to be.
I see. Now, with all of the trauma that you had in your earlier portion of your life, I kind of break it into two portions of your life, the before book and then the after book, because as I read through your manuscript that you were so kind to send so that I wouldn't sound like a raving lunatic at this end, I noticed that there is a lot of what I would think is, or what it appeared to me as, some kind of ethereal intervention. Your life was dark and of gloom, and there wasn't much left. And
right.
You had mentioned in the book that you actually considered just ending it and getting it over with, and yet something touched you and pulled out all of these positive issues and put you back to work, so to speak.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. It was a choice, essentially. I just realized that the reason why I was miserable was because of me, and it was because I was harboring this pain. I was harboring this anger and resentment toward everyone, and I had really isolated myself because of it. I mean, I had estranged myself from my family, and it wasn't the other way around, and I stopped pointing the finger at them. I stopped blaming them for all of my pain and started realizing that it was all stemming from me, and it was something that I had just was harboring and holding on to. And I, when I finally let that go, and I did come back, you know, from New York to the Midwest to reunite with my family, right. They had changed too. I mean, they had transformed too. It was amazing. They'd become much more loving and nurturing, and since then we've just become so much closer as a family. And then my second nephew was born a couple of years later in 2009, and you know, I just, the joy of watching them grow and everything has just been 180 degrees from where it was before.
Well, I certainly am pleased that did happen for you. I believe everybody will be touched by an angel, if you will, in some time in their life.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what the power is, but there is definitely a greater being than ourselves out there. Now, when you actually got into the chapter one of the book, so to speak, your book begins by recapping the billions of years of evolution of mankind, and then you make this this reality of about 200,000 years ago, which is kind of where everybody is agreeing, that evolution took some wild, inexplicable shift.
Yes.
Tell us of that moment in time.
Right. Well, inexplicably and out of nowhere, seemingly, in East Africa, the mother of our species, they call a nickname her Eve. She's a mitochondrial Eve, which our mitochondrial DNA stems from. Every single human, every single species, every single human being, Homo sapiens, stems back to this mitochondrial Eve about 200 to 250,000 years ago, and so she just kind of appeared on the scene. From that time, we have learned, you know, how to speak, how to write, language, and so forth. Civilization has gradually evolved, and modern Homo sapiens today, which we have, are virtually identical to genetically to this mitochondrial Eve back, you know, 200,000 years ago. So we are now at a verge of evolving again. And the reason for that is because of the cycles. There's a shift that is taking place. The Mayans knew about it. They were aware of the last cycle. When you understand the way the Earth rotates, it actually wobbles on its axis, right? It's tilted. And this tilt actually carves out a circle in the heavens, 1 degree every 72 years, or a totally great year of 26,000 years to go completely in one circle as it tilts.
Mm-hmm.
One half of this 26,000-year cycle is 13,000 years, okay?
Right.
So 13,000 years ago, before present time, marked the end of the last ice age, and every ancient civilization on Earth recorded a deluge. Okay, it's in the Bible under Noah. It's in the Epic of Gilgamesh. The Mayans recorded it, the Aztecs, the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Indians. Everybody recorded this deluge that occurred approximately at the end of the last ice age, about 13,000 years ago. Well, now that we are venturing beyond the end of the Mayan calendar, we are exactly 180 degrees from that point. We're exactly 13,000 years later. And another cycle is beginning. And this cycle, it's not going to be another deluge, although there's a lot of Earth changes that are taking place with the tsunamis and the earthquakes and
right.
the tornadoes and so forth, but we are not going to have a major deluge like that again. What's going to take place and what is taking place is a shift in consciousness. And this shift in consciousness is out of our heads, away from the brain, and into the heart. And this is the next human.
Very interesting, because one of our guests that we have fairly regular on the show, Mr. John Hogue, mentioned that December 21st, 2012, would not be the end of the world, but what it would be is an enlightenment, that we would shift our enlightenment of understanding. And this seems to fit with what I'm hearing from you tonight, Jason, that the shift of consciousness, if you will. Now, you mentioned in the book, and you mentioned it a few minutes ago, that DNA proof that Eve did actually exist and coming from Africa, and that all DNA can be related back to this one female. Given this, was there ever any indication that there was an Adam also, as there is in the Christian Bible?
Right, yes. I personally believe, and this is something I'm actually saving for another book.
Okay.
I didn't really delve into it in this book, just because it wasn't really necessary. But yes, I believe that our particular species now, the Homo sapiens species that began with the mitochondrial Eve, was genetically engineered.
From extraterrestrial?
Yes, from the Anunnaki.
Right, okay.
So, so you're familiar with Zechariah Sitchin.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I believe that there's a lot of truth to that, and I've done a lot of research in that area. So, yeah, I didn't really go into detail in this book on it, mm-hmm. but... of course, there was definitely an Adam, and it was actually, I believe they were cloned in the beginning, because they were mm-hmm. cloned to be a subservient race. I do mention, actually, in Chapter 6, briefly, Genesis.
Right.
There's a quote from Genesis regarding the serpent and God, the beginning quotes of Genesis, and then I actually make a reference to whatever earthbound deity this God
right.
is referring to in the Bible, because I believe that deity was an actual physical Anunnaki.
I see. And of course, in the Bible, it also says that Eve was made from the rib of Adam. Now,
right.
when you think about it in standard terms, it's like, well, how can that be? But now that we know the DNA manipulation that we are capable of as a species, it would not be far removed to realize that DNA could have actually been taken from the bone marrow of a person, a clone, or the Anunnaki.
That's right. You're exactly
so,
right.
So if you look at the Christian Bible, and I don't mean to just aim at the Christian Bible, but it's what I know best. If you look at the Christian Bible and you extrapolate some of the what seems to be a wild stories about the beginning of life, then you can start to see that there was a chemical DNA manipulation. And I noticed in your book, The Next Human, I found myself qualifying passages from your book with my cultural teachings of the Christian Bible. When you were writing this, did you find yourself referencing more, not necessarily the Christian Bible, but religions around the world?
Oh, sure. I mean, I have referenced many religions. I've studied comparative religion. So I, in the last chapter, actually, I go into not necessarily religions, but more of the ancient philosophical and metaphysical schools.
Right.
And such as the Vedas, the ancient Sanskrit Vedas, the Hermeticism, Taoism, Gnosticism, the Kabbalah, and Zen Buddhism. So a lot of these esoteric schools, philosophical schools, which I've referenced, and the reason why I've referenced them in that chapter is because they all believe, they all teach in one way or another that we are all one, that
right.
humanity is one. In the book, I refer to as the one. So, you know, Buddhism teaches this, and the Vedas teach this, Gnosticism. And so, for example, even Jesus, he said, I and my Father are one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but he also said, what I have done, you can do also and more, communicating clearly to his disciples that divinity was not limited to him, but that it extended outward to include all of humanity.
See? Now, with the... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm finished. Go ahead.
Okay. With this theory, as you're putting it together here, Jason, would you say that could be the cause of so much religious and cultural upheaval in the world as we see it? It seems to be bubbling to the surface and becoming very, very hostile. Do you see this as part of this change that we are to expect?
Exactly, exactly. And that's how I begin the book in Chapter 1, which I call Evolution 101, the pseudo-self, which is essentially the ego. And so what we have right now on the world stage, what I call the collective mirror, because everything out there is a reflection of each individual soul on Earth. Okay,
right.
And so it can only manifest, just like a movie screen can only show us what is projected upon it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The world stage can only show us what we project upon it, okay?
Right.
It all stems from us, okay? So the consciousness, the state of consciousness of the current human is egoic. In other words, they are identified with the ego.
Right.
And so the next human stage of evolution is non-egoic. This is the moving beyond the ego. This is transcending the egoic mind and living in the heart. Okay, and so the volatile arena that we see on the world stage with the conflicts that are going on, with what's brewing in Iran, with Pakistan, its government's becoming more unstable every day. They have 100 nuclear warheads that are armed and ready. North Korea and Iran are scrambling to get nuclear weapons as well. So what's happening now is that we're it's like just like a nightmare. You're more likely to wake up from a nightmare than you are
mm-hmm.
from a pleasant dream.
Right.
And so this collective awakening that we're about to embark on all together, it has to happen this way. This is the only way. It's just like if you look at evolution and you look at nature, species don't evolve until they have to, until it's a matter of survival. And so now it's not a matter of luxury anymore. We have to evolve if we're going to survive.
And that makes perfect sense. In some teachings, the theory that if every person on Earth was to stand still and say the word peace all in unison, then peace would be automatic around the world. So there is that theory that we do control the craziness and the peace that is around the world by some some energy that we do create. I have to tell you, Jason, that after reading your introduction and listening to your trials and tribulations, I most certainly felt a kinship with you. Much of what you wrote happened in my life also to a lesser degree or a different degree, but followed almost the same kind of run. My mother died of lung cancer. It's a fact of life, unfortunately, but my mother did die of lung cancer. My father died of a broken heart, having been married to the lady for 49 years, and she was a wonderful lady at that. I, too, walked away from a fantastic companion in order to wrestle and manage some personal demons, and I felt empty, even with a great deal of success, in fact, that in part, that is what created Night Talk Radio Brand. And in the darkest days, as you wrote in your book, you know, I also considered, is this it? Is this all there is? And I can only explain it that I received some form of enlightenment from within, something external maybe, it were internal, something ethereal. I'm not quite sure. So my kinship with you, sir, after reading the opening of your book, it was like, I have to get through this. I have to read this. This is too important not to, because the simpatico relationship with two total strangers, it is absolutely amazing. Now, we're 5 minutes away, actually 3 minutes away from the bottom of the hour. We will try and do a station break at the bottom of the hour for those down the line. But you mentioned early on in your book that the breeding ground of evil, even evil being a threefold process. Can you explain this a little bit to your audience?
Yes, certainly. Well, most people, when they associate the worst evil, that's the title of the section, Breeding the Worst Evil.
Right.
And most people associate, you know, serial killers, tyrants such as Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, with the worst evil, right? Because,
right.
You know, they were out there, you know, leading. However, most don't realize that without the zealous following, the group,
right,
the tribe, the nation that actually backed them 100% with zeal and provocation, they were nothing. They could do nothing. So it wasn't the sole individual that was responsible for the worst evil, the lone serial killer. No, it wasn't. It was nothing more than average citizens.
True.
Average citizens who identified themselves egoically with an ideology,
mm-hmm,
an idea, whether that idea was communism, whether it was fascism, any ism out there. You become so entrenched with that idea that it is inseparable from the absolute truth.
Right.
When you believe that much, your opinion is that strong in anything, that is the breeding ground for the worst evil.
And as the German people stated after World War II, they were caught up. It was almost as if they were transfixed with,
yes,
the the pure race and the common search, and they couldn't believe that they had succumbed to it. But they had succumbed to it, much like you say, from the common mindset. And
yes,
good people turn bad. And it's very, very interesting how this can happen to a mass audience, whether they realize it or not, almost like a mesmerization,
yes,
if you will. Interesting.
Well, that's why I call it the pseudo-self. And the
right.
Phantom self, of course, is the shadow of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
So this false self, this that we call the ego, and of course the pain body, which is its shadow, the ego is manifested physically.
Right.
This is not who we are, okay? And so it does take us over. You know, the saying, the devil made me do it. It's very true. It's very true because people do things that they normally wouldn't do when they're taken over by this entity. But until we realize that it's there, until we can separate ourselves from it, then we will be vulnerable to it.
Very well said. We're going to take a quick break, Jason, do a station break. Let everybody go refresh their glasses. And we'll be back in 2 minutes. How does that sound?
Okay, sounds good, Colin.
Okay. We're with Jason Lincoln Jeffries, The Next Human. Fabulous book. I'm halfway through, and I got to tell you, I got to finish this.
The Kepler satellite has identified 2,000 planets orbiting other star systems. So tonight, when you look at the night sky, realize that somebody could be looking back at you. Now, if there is a life form out there, they could be literally millions of years ahead of us. The universe is 13.7 billion years old, so a million years is nothing compared to the age of the universe. And for the most part, I think they're going to be friendly. But if they are hostile, it would be like Bambi meeting Godzilla if we ever had to fight them.
You're listening to Night Talk Radio on the TerraChat Radio Network.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
Well, realize that if they're that advanced, they can reach the Earth from a distant star. They are already thousands of years ahead of us in technology. And we would present no military challenge to such an advanced civilization. Now realize, for the most part, there are lots of uninhabited planets with resources on them. So if they can reach the Earth, they can certainly reach other planets that are uninhabited. So for the most part, I think they're going to leave us alone. But if one of them is hostile, watch out. We would be a pushover for them. Forget all the Hollywood movies.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
And tonight, Night Talk Radio is proud to bring you Jason Lincoln Jeffers, The Next Human. And Jason, before we went to the break, we were talking about evil. And your quote in the book from the Gospel of Luke 23:34, a phrase we use constantly on the VOCR political radio show, which is carried by the TerraChat Network, said, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That relevance, I think, is very powerful, given the statements that we've just discussed regarding evil.
Absolutely. We sometimes forget. I mean, you know, my nephew, watching them grow since they were babies and seeing how they, you know, will get, especially when they went through their terrible twos, and they, you know, cause havoc. But they don't know what they're doing. They don't know when they, you know, knock over your glass and, you know, stain the carpet. They don't know, you know, when they're screaming so loudly that you think your eardrums will pop. They just don't know what they're doing.
Right.
So this statement could not be more applicable today, that what Jesus said, that, you know, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. Everybody is on their own step, individual step, on the ladder of evolutionary consciousness.
Right.
Okay, in the book I give examples such as, a dolphin has a higher evolved consciousness than a tuna. A dog will have a higher evolved consciousness than a squirrel. And an ant will have a higher evolved consciousness than a fungus, right? So everything on the scale of evolution has a consciousness appropriate to where that particular species is. Well, it's the same with humans. Even though we're all one species, from a soul level, we are all different grades, so to speak. In other words, Some people on the first graders, some people are 12th graders. That doesn't mean a 12th grader is better than a first grader. It just means that they're a little bit more evolved.
They're at a better level, yeah.
Yeah, that's all it means. So when we can look upon a person, look upon a tribe, a group, or even a nation, right, such as Iran or North Korea, as infants on that evolutionary ladder of consciousness, then we can be more compassionate and understanding. And instead of retaliating with anger, you know, as we did in Iraq, understand where they are. And let's start leading by example instead of just bombing countries simply because we can, right?
Right.
This is the way of the next human. It's going to be nonviolent, non-reactive, non-resistant, and that's the only way to peace, as I point out very clearly in the beginning of Chapter 2, The Phantom Self, that what resists persists, okay? Every action causes an equal and opposite reaction. That's Newtonian physics.
That's okay? Right,
the yin and the yang. Everything in this particular dimension is duality. So
right.
When you push against the force, it tends to push back. An example that I give is that if you don't believe this, try walking into a crowded room and screaming, "Get the blankety blank out of my way," and see what happens. You'll soon
right.
find that you'll have everybody pushing you back
and yep.
probably out the door. But if you whisper in their ears, "Could you kindly allow me passage?" then you'll find that the crowd will part like the Red Sea did for Moses.
Almost
that's the way of the next human.
Yeah, almost like a Chinese finger puzzle. The
right.
more you,
exactly.
the more you pull, the tighter it gets, and you know. So I can see that. In your book, The Next Human, I gotta tell you, I love the way you used various quotes. Yeah, you used a Da Vinci quote that is probably when I was growing up as a kid. For some reason, it stuck in my head, and not much did when I was going to school, but this did. The height of a man's success is gauged by his self-mastery, the depth of his failure by his self-abandonment, and he who cannot establish dominion over himself will have no dominion over others.
Right.
Leonardo da Vinci, an absolute fabulous quote that is ageless, timeless. It rings true today as it did in his time. Now, how difficult was it to research those quotes as you were writing along? Did it come to you in an ethereal form, or was this a conscious method of tying the book together?
No, it was not conscious at all. In fact, the most of the book and most of the quotes just kind of fell in my lap, so to speak. The process of writing this, especially in the last 8 months, was that I would wake up. For some reason, I just started waking up earlier and earlier in the morning, and to the point where eventually I was waking up at 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep, so I would get up and go to the computer and then work throughout the night when it was very quiet and very still. And it just allowed me to get into that zone, you know?
Right. Right.
And so I was able to kind of really just channel a lot of this, the words that kind of just flowed through me. So the book, I really can't take credit for a lot of it because it really just kind of wrote itself in a sense. A lot of these quotes, you know, just when I would go on the internet and I would just know exactly what to search for, and then the quote would come up and I said, "That's perfect for that section." And
mm-hmm.
it would be, I wouldn't even think about it. And then later when I would go back and look at it, I was, "Oh, that's pretty good," you know.
Well, I'll tell you.
It wasn't conscious.
Yeah. Some of the phrases in the ancient writings, some of the Greek mythology you use, such as the one with the hunter Narcissus, when he gazed down into the pool of water and fell in love with his own reflection, that
right.
really made that chapter shine. It just really brought it to an every man understanding of what you were trying to say. I was very impressed with the way those phrases, especially the use of Greek mythology and the Christian Bible. It was quite impressive. You stated in the next human stage, it will be one of non-egoic interaction. Do you see this as an upcoming action in the near future? Do you have a timeline? I mean, in other words, is it going to make December the 21st, 2012? Or are we still maybe 100, 200 years away from being able to bring this to fruition?
Okay. Well, the answer is actually revealed in the last chapter to your question.
Darn. I haven't got there yet.
I know you haven't. So what I'll do is I'll briefly summarize it for you.
Okay.
The date actually comes from the Mayans. Obviously the end of their calendar is this year, the end of this year. However, the Mayans recently met the first time that all the tribes, not just the Mexican Mayans, but also the Guatemalan and the Honduran Mayans, all came together for the first time just in the past 10 years.
Right.
I don't know the exact date because the date was not given. So anyway, they shared their knowledge together in this meeting, this grand meeting with all the tribes. Mm-hmm. And they decided that the actual date for the transitional shift is not December 21st. That does mark the end of the calendar.
Right.
The actual date is February the 19th, 2013.
Interesting. 4 days after my birthday.
Oh, well, that's wonderful.
Good old Aquarius, what can I say?
You're an Aquarius. Well, that's great. That date is really the marker. So, no, we're not going to have to wait another century or two. It's here and now. This is not a coincidence that all the spiritual teachers are coming out now and speaking about. We're all kind of speaking the same message,
right,
that this shift is taking place. And so what's happening is that the kundalini of the earth, which I go into pretty much in depth, the kundalini life force energy of the earth, mm-hmm, in chapter 6, the ethereal self, and then again in chapter 7, but that is actually shifted. It was the last 13,000 years it's been in the mountains of Tibet, and it's just been in the past 30 years where it actually has uprooted. It was actually 50 years ago when it was uprooted, but in the past 30 years, it has made its transition and has settled into the mountains of Chile and Peru.
So, where it started, maybe? Or back where the Mayans were in connection with it?
No, this is a new location where the root chakra of the earth, Gaia, is going to be for the next cycle, for the next 13,000 years. The last 13,000 years it's been in Tibet, and there's about a 700-mile radius around that area. They actually found a pyramid there back in the 80s, a beautiful white pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And inside the pyramid, I get into this in Chapter 7, so... inside the White Pyramid, they found the Flower of Life. They didn't find any hieroglyphs or any markings or anything like that, but they discovered the Flower of Life. Anyway, that particular pyramid marked the root chakra for the Kundalini energy for the last cycle. Now, there's a new location in Peru and in Chile, and because of this new location and this new shift, whoever goes there and visits there is going to be experiencing this wonderful Kundalini energy. And then just like it happened before in Tibet, where that area gave birth to Buddhism, it gave birth to Taoism, a lot of the great spiritual teachers have come from that area. And so now it's going to happen again, but it'll happen in Chile and Peru.
Interesting. I have to tell you that as I was reading into this, and I did scan a couple of chapters just so I wouldn't, like I say, sound like a raving lunatic on this end, but in many of your quotes, you actually injected some humor through fictional characters such as Yoda. And and I actually, it really made me smile because it's amazing how we are influenced by what is seen on TV and in the movies. But the words that were written for Yoda, you know, the ego thrives on fear, fear is the path of the dark side, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. I mean, it just cannot be any clearer. And when I see those, I mean, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that was Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, one of my favorite movies of all time. But when I read this, and knowing that it was, quote, entertainment, unquote, it's amazing how it transcends what we're trying to talk about tonight with the next human. And from my understanding of the book so far, it's your belief that in the near future we shall be able to control those primal instincts that command anger and viciousness and hate. Am I correct in my synopsis there?
Right, because the next human will have transcended the ego. They will have transcended the pain body. That part of us will be gone. That will be part of the past. Now, that doesn't mean that every single person on Earth is going to evolve into the next human. That's not the way it works, because there has to be a certain amount of people that remain unconscious. That's just part of evolution. Otherwise, there would be no growth, because we wouldn't have anything to, you know, say, okay, that's where I don't want to be, right?
Yeah.
So that's the impetus. That's the evolutionary impulse, see? And so when we look upon, and there's no judgment, it's just an observation, you know, when we look upon countries like, you know, Iran and North Korea, and so we see how they behave, we see the violence, and see Syria, we see them, you know, slaughtering their people every day, and we see that, okay, this is the pain body, this is the ego in action, this is how it controls you and manipulates your, and so this is what we don't want to be, and this is the consciousness, the evolved consciousness of a burgeoning next human. When he or she can look upon that and say, that's where I don't want to be, I want to be living in the heart, I want to be loving my fellow humans, and living in peace, in harmony, and compassion, and creativity, then that is the impetus right there for growth.
There are a number of listeners out there that I'm sure may be out of work and almost out of hope, Jason. They may find it difficult to overcome their problems. Yet, in your book, The Next Human, you explained that you managed to do it. And I think this book would be a great help to many people that are out there worrying about their future and a low point of their life. I think it would put it together. Now, like I said, there is no way we can get through all of the chapters on one show, because it is deep, and it does go into energies and good, healthy living and the likes. But there's a passage in your book that describes living in a day-tight compartment. And I was surprised when I read this, because I was taught this action several years ago in a management course that was held by Dale Carnegie. For your audience, could you please explain, if you will, this tactic of living in day-type compartments?
Of course, yes. This is how I explain or teach how to begin inviting presence into your life. The ego cannot live in the now. The ego dissolves in the now. The ego will take your mind into the past or into the future. Okay, this is why meditation is so important, and I teach that in the book as well. But the datite compartments, if you can begin living in datite compartments, in other words, only believe what is happening during that day, okay? And don't worry about tomorrow or the next day. Only address what is happening today. And if you can do that for a period of weeks or months, practice doing that every day, then eventually move to hour type compartments. In other words, only believe what you see, what's happening in the hour.
Right.
And then do that for a few weeks or a few months. And then eventually you come to living in minute type, second type, and then now type compartments, where you're living constantly in the now. And when you are able to do that, eventually, that's the level of Zen master, right? You are living completely in the now. You are not believing anything that's not happening in the now. And there's no depression, there's no anxiety, there's no stress. That is living in the heart, because the ego will constantly try to take over your mind and project your worries and fear. And this is where people get anxiety, this is where they get depression, because they're worried about the future, they're worried about this happening. And then they dwell on the past because they have all these negative patterns that they're looking back on, right? So the ego is taking you to the past, and then it's taking you to the future. And then, you know, you're like a ping pong ball going back and forth. That's the mind. And so to get out of your mind, get out of the head, into the heart, is living in the now, living in the present moment.
Yeah, I found when I was taught this method, I must admit, I found this to be very powerful in controlling my doubt and insecurity. It really refocused my attention on what I had to do, A, for my employer, and B, for myself on a day-by-day basis.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, your whole life transforms when you understand that really there only is the now, okay? Like in the book, I give an example. If you had a time machine and you went backwards in time a million years, or you went forwards in time a million years and you got out of your time machine, it would still be now.
Right.
You know, so this whole time thing is just an illusion. In this realm of what we call duality, polarity, so that we can grow and evolve, so that we can acquire certain skills and knowledge and have experiences and so forth. That's just part of being human, and that's fine. That's one purpose. But your first and number one purpose, your primary purpose, which I point out in the last chapter, is discovering your zero-point self.
Right.
Okay, and the zero-point self is that singularity, which is the source, that is non-dual, okay, which means that it's one. And there is only one. There is only one of us here. We're one being, one entity, that is multiplied throughout the universe of the infinitude of life forms out there, all sentient beings, all animals, plants, planets, everything is part of the one. Okay, and so when you realize that there is only one here, there is only one of us, then that dissolves the ego in and of itself, because the ego has to create separation for it to exist.
Right.
That's the whole purpose of the ego, right? So when you realize that when your ego identified, you're looking upon your fellow human as being separate from them.
Yeah.
And that's the cause of all of our problems right now. That in and of itself, in a nutshell, is the cause of the wars, the cause of the famine, the cause of the poverty, the cause of, you know, 2 billion people going without clean water.
Right.
You know, 80% of our species lives on less than $10 a day. You know, this is insanity, you know, how we treat one another as a species. And so in order to get beyond that and start living together as one, we have to realize that it's coming to consciousness. And that's the next human, realizing
it. Right. Makes complete sense to me. And I like the way you put it together in the book, The Next Human, Jason. I truly do. Now, just as we have a few minutes left, you talk about bullying And you used a great quote from Buddha. Whatever words we utter should be chosen with care, for people will hear them and be influenced by them for good or for ill. And bullying has become one of those great buzzwords in the media and also in the school system. And again, I invite our listeners to pick up the book, The Next Human, because that there's a little bit for everybody, including a balanced, healthy lifestyle of what is protein and what actually works for a human body and what gets the intelligence and the mind working. And I like some of the unconventional medicine and the natural healing that you mentioned in the Next Human. And I wish we had a couple more hours to get into it and talk about the great sugar addiction and the key to switching off the body's hunger, and a number of other things that are in the book. But unfortunately, we're almost out of time. So, Jason, I would really like to thank you for taking the time and coming on the Night Talk. And I would also like to organize a rebooking for you so we can get into more of that healthy lifestyle and food for the mind. Would that sound?
I think that sounds great. I would love it.
I will have Dale set something up, and we'll get you in here probably closer to December the 21st, only because it's one of those funky dates that we really like to watch closely. So,
okay.
Jason Lincoln Jeffers, the author of The Next Human. Thank you very much, Jason. I truly appreciate your conversation tonight.
Okay. Thank you so much, Colin, for having me.
My pleasure, sir. Good night. And ladies and gentlemen, Jason Lincoln Jeffers. You can find him on www.jasonlincolnjeffers.com. Head over to his website, pick up the book, because I got to tell you, it's to say that it's amazing. I'm sure you hear that from a number of announcers and broadcasters, but it really hits home. We have hit towards the top of the hour, and it is almost time that we get out of here. But I will say this, that for those people out there that are having a tough time, pick up the book and read it. You'd be amazed at some of the information in there that may be able to help you. And we wish and pray for you all. God bless you all. And another time we'll catch you again.
Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. The first heaven and the first earth had disappeared now. Then I heard a loud voice call from the throne. You see this city? Here God lives among men. He will make his home among them. If they need God with them, he will wipe away all tears from their eyes. There will be no more death and no more mourning or sadness. The world of the past has gone. www.terrorchatnet.com.